It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. So nice that we do it twice over at rostucker.com or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. How about the guest we have today, Matthew Berry, the most well-known fantasy player on the planet, most well-known fantasy analyst over at ESPN. Can't wait for you to hear Matthew Berry's story. It's remarkable for those of you that don't know it. We have, as good as Matthew Berry is, we have, in my humble opinion, the best fantasy analyst in the galaxy. Even if he's not as well known as Matthew Berry, he's Evan Silva from rotoworld.com. Evan, thank you as always for being a part of the show. Make sure you're checking him out on Twitter at Evan Silva. This is when Evan and Roto World really thrives. It's blurb season, baby. There are blurbs coming down all day, every day. Make sure you are checking him out on social media. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook is facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. And the channel for all the podcasts that we have for you, like Even Money, as for the gambling people, Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You can check them all out at RTF Podcast. Is that Twitter handle as well. Before we even get into the Matthew Berry stuff, I want to make sure you guys all have Squad QL. Scotty Boy just sent me an email. He got the Squad QL app. He's going to be in the next Fantasy Feast League. By the way, I will announce the final contestant during the show tomorrow. The final contestant for the July Best Ball Draft, I will announce tomorrow, so you can still win. I haven't picked it yet. Or you can already start to try to get into the season-long Fantasy Feast Eaton League. Season-long, baby. We'll do that draft at the end of August. So it's time. It is football time, and it's time for you guys to get in on some of these drafts. And when you do, make sure you have the Squad QL app. It's the only app you need to dominate your fantasy football season this year. They got it for baseball, of course. The app optimizes fantasy football and baseball teams, suggests trades, and free agent ads drops. So it's an app that basically is like your personal consultant going over your league and giving you advice. It's amazing. It's changing the game. You can sync your ESPN, CBS, and Yahoo leagues right to the app and optimize your lineup, create transactions, and get trade suggestions all right in the app. Squad QL app, absolutely awesome. Almost as awesome, Evan, Matthew Berry. I was able to catch up with him recently at the NFFC.
Next meal.
Really excited to be able to talk to Matthew Berry today from ESPN. So, Matthew, I think everybody sees you on TV and everybody's aware of who you are. And I'm sure you've been asked this other times, but give me your background, man. Where are you from?
Okay.
And how did you know? What were you doing before you became, you know, one of the biggest fantasy experts in the world?
Grew up in College Station, Texas.
Really?
Yeah, my dad teaches at Texas A&M University, still does to this day. My mom is a former mayor of College Station. So grew up in College Station, Texas, went to Syracuse University, go Cuse. And
because you wanted to get into broadcasting.
I wanted to get into broadcasting. Wanted to actually be a, yeah, I mean, I wanted to be, get into, not broadcasting like sports broadcasting, but more like I wanted to be in Hollywood, like TV and film. And so, you know, whatever, the my guidance counselor that year, that book, you know, said that the Newhouse School at Syracuse had the best communication school in the country. At the,
okay.
And it's a very good school. So I went to Syracuse, graduated there, moved out to Los Angeles to become a movie and sitcom writer.
Wow.
You know, spent like, whatever, 2 years, you know, getting lunches and answering phones, but eventually broke in. And but I've been playing fantasy sports since I was 14 years old. And
how old are you?
I'm 48.
30 years?
30 years.
So 1988?
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I've been playing snow since, no, so 33 years, 34 years. So I'm 48, 14, 34 years.
Wow.
34 years. So, my first fantasy league was a fantasy baseball league in 1984.
Wow.
Like, you kept stats by hand.
Yeah.
And, like, in fact, I've written about this before, but I had read there was an original book called the Rotisserie League Baseball Book, written by the founding fathers, a guy named Dan Okrent and Glenn Wagner and the people that created the game. And I had read this book, and I was a pretty good tennis player, and I used to take tennis lessons. And so I'm going to this tennis lesson, and my tennis coach is talking to what I later learned is his best friend, and they're talking this kind of weird, strange language. And I went up to him and said, "Are you guys talking about Rotisserie League baseball?" And they're like, "You've heard of it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you guys have?" Because I'd read this book that had just come out. And so it was like a bunch of like 25 to 30 year olds. And I'm 14 years old, but they needed one guy. Like, back, I mean, this is 1984. Like, not, you know, fantasy wasn't very popular back then. People didn't even know what it was. So it was me and then all these, like, 25 to 30-year-old guys in this league at 14. They just needed one last guy for the league, a 10-team league. And I joined it, and I later ended up getting to meet Glenn Wagner and Dan Okrent, and we talked it through, and that league was one of the first 50 fantasy baseball leagues in America. And it's a league that continues to this day, 34 years later. And so, anyway, what I've been playing since, like I said, been playing since I was 14. In 1999, I'm living in Hollywood and Roto World.
Yeah.
Site Roto World. Our mutual friend Evan Silva, yeah, obviously, does a great job over there. So Roto World was advertising for writers. And this is back in the day when, you know, CompuServe and Prodigy and, you know, AOL.
Wow.
You've got mail,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it was an exciting, that was a new thing. Like, oh, my goodness, I got an email. Wow, that's so cool. Like,
yeah,
it was a novel thing to get an email. That's how long ago it was. And they said, "We're looking for fantasy writers to write for Roto World." And I wrote them and I said, "Hey, I'm a professional writer living out here in Hollywood, but fantasy sports is my passion. I love it. And I think it would be so much fun just to do a column on the side. Can I try out? Can I send you a column?" And they wrote me back the next day and said, "We looked you up on IMDb. Married with Children is our favorite show of all time. You're hired." So because I wrote on Married with Children, I got
it. You wrote for Married with Children?
I wrote for Married with Children.
For how long?
For 1 year. I wrote 28 episodes.
So
wrote
how many?
On 28 episodes. I specifically wrote five personally, but I worked on 28 episodes of
so,
the show.
Okay, so how does that work? How many writers does a show like that have?
I think we had eight or nine.
Wow.
It's called a writer's room. Every sitcom has a writer's room. And you pitch jokes and you come up with stories together. And even when it says, if you watch a sitcom and it says written by so-and-so, but if you watch the credits and it's like story editor, supervising producer, co-producer, consulting producer, that kind of stuff, those are all writers. Those are all people that are, for the most part, people that are in the writer's room and coming up with jokes and coming up with storylines and beats. I mean, there's only five episodes of Married with Children that say written by Matthew Berry. Actually,
right.
Matthew Berry and Eric Abrams, who's my writing partner at the time. But, you know, there are jokes or story ideas or things of mine in 28 different episodes.
But how do you get credit for those five? How do they decide who to give credit to for that?
The way it works is that, so you sit around in a room and you come up with an idea.
Yeah.
And so, like, here's one that we did. At the time we were there, and I don't know if you remember this. This goes back a while, but you know, I don't remember. Kathy Lee Gifford had like a shoe company or something like that, and it came out that like the shoes that or that she endorsed some sort of she had a shoe that she either endorsed or was connected to in somehow, and it came out or there was a report that the shoes were being made by underprivileged children in a third world country. And it became this controversy
for
Kathy Lee Gifford. So anyway, so I remember we were sitting in the room, we're all trying to come up with ideas, and I said, "What if?" I don't know if you remember. Al worked at a shoe store called Gary Shoes, right?
Yes.
And I said, "What if it comes out that all of Gary's shoes are made by immigrant children in a third world country?" So, so Al goes to investigate, but it turns out all the immigrant kids make more money than he does. So that was the pitch. I just said that in the room. And everyone laughed, and they said, "Great, let's do it." And so then the executive producer, a woman named Pam Eels, said, "Okay, that's great." And then you start fleshing it out. Okay, what's the first scene? What's the second scene? What happens? What's the act break? How does it resolve itself? And, like, in that particular episode, it ended up getting made. But anyway, so everyone sort of fleshes it out and comes up with ideas. And this is how Marcy could do it. And this is what Peg's role would be in the
right.
in the show, and et cetera, et cetera. And we need to come up with another storyline. So what are, like, you know, what are Kelly and Bud going to be doing? And so you sort of, you whiteboard it out and you come up with a beat. And then basically, because that was my particular pitch, you know, Pam said, all right, Matthew and Eric, you guys go write that episode. So we would come up with an outline based on everyone's suggestions, and we turn in the outline, and then everyone would go over it and say, like, I don't think you need this scene, or, hey, seems like Kelly's a little light in the scene, or, hey, Bud feels weird in this scene, or something like that. Everyone just sort of gives notes, and you all sort of decide as a group, and then you go off and write a first draft, come back in 2 weeks and say, like, hey, here's the first version of the draft, and then you go over it, and you're like, hey, can we beat this joke by, you know, can we beat Al's joke here? Hey, it feels like this is a repeated beat in this scene. We don't really need this. And, like, you go through it beat by beat. And so, yeah. So, anyway, I did that for a number of years. And they asked me to, because I wrote on Married with Children, I got the opportunity to write for free for an internet website that no one had heard of at the time.
Called
Roto-World. I mean, it's obviously a huge site now. But at
because
the time,
they love the show.
Because they love the show. I think I'm a pretty good writer, and after 4.5 years, I'd become so popular, I was making $50 a column. I don't want to brag, but I was making $50 a column at 4.5 years later. And
you did it for 4.5 years, making nothing to 50 bucks.
I mean,
bucks.
It was a passion. It was just something I loved to do on the side.
Right.
And I developed, a big enough following, and I'm doing a very short version of the story.
Right.
It's in my book. If you read the Fantasy Life book, it's, you know, an expanded version of the story. But in essence, basically, I felt like it was 2004. People were starting to make money on the internet a little bit at that point. And I had a pretty nice following. And so I thought, you know what? Maybe I should go start my own website. Again, something on the side, but maybe I can earn a couple of bucks there. So I started TalentedMrRotor.com, which was the website, which was sort of my nickname. And I didn't raise money. I didn't go out to, like, a VC or anything like that to raise money. I scraped together a couple of bucks for myself to start the site. And I grabbed a couple of writers, people that I knew were good writers and good fantasy analysts, and asked them to come write for me. And I basically knew that the only way I could promote it was myself. So what I did was I basically went to every website I could find, every radio station I could find, every TV station I could find, and say, I will come on your air. I will write for you for free. I'll be on your air for free. Just link back to my website. Just mention my website. Just promote my website. Roto-World is one of those places. Roto-World let me continue writing a column for them, and they linked back to the news site. And like Sporting News and MLB.com and NBA.com, and I did a bunch of stuff. And, of course, one of the first places I went was ESPN. And I started doing some local radio in L.A. I don't know if you know Steve Mason. Do you know Mason in Ireland?
Mason in Ireland. Yeah.
So Steve Mason and Steve was a fan of mine. And so Steve brought me on to Mason in Ireland, and I would do, I would do a hit. I'd do, you know, one segment, which would turn to two, which would turn to an hour, which would, hey, why don't you fill in for John and co-host with me, which turned into ESPN 710 in Los Angeles, giving me my own two-hour fantasy football show once a week. And that led to me doing, hey, why don't you do a weekly segment on cold pizza? If you remember cold pizza?
Yes, yeah.
And that led to, why don't you do a weekly segment on ESPN News, which led to, hey, we'd like you to write a column for ESPN, the magazine. And just kept building it. I kept meeting more and more people at ESPN, and they kept liking what I was doing. And the fans were responding to it. And then eventually, in 2006, they came to me and we started talking. And, you know, towards the end of 2006, early 2007, they said, hey, we've been talking internally that we need a Mel Kiper for fantasy football. We need to find a Mel Kiper for fantasy football. We think it's big enough now that we need somebody to do that. We like all the work you do for us. So we'd like to buy your website, move you to Connecticut, and make you the guy.
Wow.
And that was, I moved to Bristol in February of 2007. So that was early 2007 that happened. And
was it no brainer for you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a dream come true. Obviously, it's an amazing job. I never thought this would, you know, be a career. But what I found myself doing, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, in 2005, I was really depressed. I was going to therapy, and I'm like, I have this great job in Hollywood as a writer. I'm in this happy marriage. Why am I so depressed? I don't understand why I'm depressed. And after some therapy, I realized I actually really didn't like my job very much, even though it seemed like a glamorous job. I actually didn't enjoy it very much. And there were some, you know, real fundamental issues in my marriage. And nothing bad, by the way. There's no drama, no third person, anything like that. Just my wife, my first wife and I got married at, I was 25, she was 23. We're just way too young.
Right.
And I'm at this point, I'm 35 and she's 33. I remember us talking at one point and we said, you know, if we just met today, we wouldn't even go on a date, let alone be married. Like we just grew apart. You know what I mean? She's not a bad, she's a good person. We're still friends to this day.
Right.
She's a lovely woman. We just grew apart. We got married too young and grew apart.
Right.
So completely no drama breakup. We agreed that we should split up. And so it's 2005 at this point. And I realized that the only thing that was making me happy was this dumb little website that had a couple of thousand kids on it. I was going to bed at night and waking up in the morning just thinking about this website. So, I said, you know what? I'll probably only make $10,000 a year. I don't care. I just want to be happy. I'm just going to chase happiness.
Wow.
And so at the end of 2005, I went to my writing partner and I said, I want to try to give this a go. I'm going to give up show business. Let's write one last script together, save the money, and then let's go our separate ways. And I'm going to try to make a go of this site. And so that was in 2005. And then I ended up, lucking out and getting in with ESPN at, full time in 2007. And at the end of my current contract, I will have been at the company 17 years.
Wow. And I think that your writing background and the sitcom background, I think that has something to do with your success on TV, radio, and writing, don't you?
I mean, yes.
Your content is great, but it's still entertainment.
Oh, 100%.
And you being able to crack a joke, have fun, make it light, I think is a big part of it.
Well, I appreciate that, Ross. I mean, I've always said, like, look, we're all looking at the same stats. We're all looking at the same film. We're all looking at the same players. And you may like a guy and I may not like a guy. But at the end of the day, we're all talking about the same sort of players. And there's only so many ways you can say, like, I think Mahomes is a sleeper, you know, or I'm not crazy about Dak this year, right? There's only so many ways you can say that. And ultimately, my writing ability, I think, is what, you know, sets me apart. And when, you know, at this event, when fans stop me or whatever, they never say to me, oh, thank you for Kareem Hunt last year or what, you know, or some of my picks that worked out. They never say that. They're always like, I love the story of you meeting your wife. I love the story of you and your stepkids, you know, at the game. I love the story of you buying your house. It's always from the book or from my columns or from the podcast. It's always the personal stuff that people have when they come up to me that respond to me. And so that's been special. And, you know, when people ask me for advice about getting into broadcasting, I would say this, and you probably say the exact same thing. I always say, like, the most important thing is the ability to communicate, because you could have the best analysis. You could have the smartest, but if you can't communicate it, right? I think that's part of, you know, why your success, like, you weren't the biggest name, as a football player, but because of your ability to communicate and be entertaining, that's why you've had the success you've had. And so it's, you know, I think that's an important thing. When I went out to Hollywood, I took an improv class. Not that I ever wanted to be an actor, but I just knew in Hollywood you have to do a lot of pitching. You have to do a lot of, like, presenting ideas and being in a room. And I said, I just want to have the confidence to get up in front of strangers and try to make a joke or, you know, be prepared for anything that comes at you. And I'm not a good actor, but what I am is I'm comfortable in front of a microphone. I'm comfortable in front of TV, and I think that's vitally important. Is I had a kid come up to me yesterday, ask about he wants to be a sports writer, and I said, it's tough to just be a sports writer these days because so many major media companies. One of the things that I think ESPN, and this is what I think you're getting at, Ross, one of the things that I think ESPN appreciates about me is that I have the ability, and listen, I have different levels of ability at all these things, but I have the ability to write a 3,000-word column, to do a three-hour live television show on Sundays, to do a 45-minute podcast, to do a 45-second hit on SportsCenter, to do an 8-minute radio hit. Those are all very different, you know, skills to host a 22-minute half-hour TV show. They're all very different skill sets. And again, I'm better at some of them than I am than others, but I'm passable at all of them. And so that versatility for, and it's not just ESPN, but any major media company, that versatility is super important in a world where media options are so diverse.
I like your article that you wrote recently about manipulating stats.
Yes.
How, you know, who'd you say? Well, it was Drew Brees was the same quarterback, right?
Right, yes.
It was like these negative. By the way, I had hardly ever seen a negative Drew Brees stat before, so it's kind of like, wow.
Right.
You can make Drew not seem as good as he is.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you can, you know, stats are really helpful, but they can, they're only part of the story.
I don't think a lot of people realize. I think a lot of people think it's numbers. Here's the numbers for this guy. And when someone gives them a number and they're like, oh, he's right. But you proved that you can do it on either side.
100%. You can, every stat, I can talk up or talk down any single player or any other subject. And that's the point, is that it's when you hear a stat or you hear somebody say something on television, understand, even if it's presented as a fact, while it may be a true fact, it's only part of the story. It's the part of the story that that person wants you to see.
Right.
So in the article, if you can Google it on ESPN.com, it's 100 facts. Basically what I do is it'll be a little bit of a surprise, but I give two players and I say, which player do you want?
Right.
And it's the same player.
Right.
It's Drew Brees. So I ruined that for anyone that's
ruined. Well, I already ruined it.
It's all good. But it's all good. But that's the idea. You can see, you can just see. Yeah, stats are very easily manipulated, and so I cop to that. I say, look, I do it, and everyone does it, because you don't have enough time. On even if ESPN gave me 24 hours, you still wouldn't be able to get through every single facet of every player, every scheme, and things that you just don't know. Like, you know, is the wide receiver hitting on the quarterback's wife? You know, is somebody a drunk? Is somebody hiding a hamstring injury because he's in a contract year?
Yeah.
Like, you just, there's so many things you don't know that go into success on a football field, that ultimately you have to try to take it all in and just make a call, because that's what any of us are doing, is taking a small piece of a larger pie and making a call.
What do you think's next for fantasy? What do you think is the next frontier? I mean, obviously we're here talking at the NFFC. There's guys that are going to have in-game substitutions. There's about a million different formats.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's good or bad. I guess it's good because people can play what they want.
Right.
But it almost, to me, it's a kind of overwhelming how many different formats it seems like there are now. How many different ways you can play?
I think innovation is good, because ultimately, the strongest survive. Like, not all these kind of formats will survive. But honestly, a number of years ago, these guys started a thing called the World Championship Fantasy Football, which was like this high stakes thing, and people would pay like $1,500 and they'd fly to Vegas and they'd play for big money. I'm just like, wow, people are really going to do that? Who's going to fly? And they got hundreds of people to do it, and it's there's now a number of people that do kind of what high stakes football, and then daily fantasy sports took off, and so you've got FanDuel and DraftKings. In-game is sort of interesting. I think there'll be sort of like player prop stuff. I think with the Supreme Court ruling about gambling, I think you'll see some more games that are sort of hybrid games that feel a little half kind of gambly, half sort of fantasy sportsy.
I was going to ask you if you thought, that was going to be my last question, is if you thought that would help or hurt fantasy, or neither.
I think sort of neither.
Okay.
Because I know that sounds crazy to say, but, you know, I get asked that question a lot, and I'm always just like, the idea that people haven't been gambling till now is ridiculous. Right? I mean, like, all we're going to do is we're going to legislate it and we're going to take it out of the shadows. And so maybe there's some casual people that weren't playing before that now might, because it's easier. But for the most part, gambling's insanely popular and has been going on for a long time. And fantasy football is still popular. And I believe that it is a very different process of me saying, like, hey, Ross, me and you and all of our buddies and Evan and whatever, we're all going to get together and we're going to sit around and we're going to draft players and we're going to have a few drinks and laughs and we're going to bust on each other and we're going to go through the season. We're going to make waivers and pickups and trades. And that whole process and trying to figure out who to start and sit, that's a very different process and experience than you know what? Give me the Ravens plus five. Right. You know, and not that there isn't research that goes into give me the Ravens plus five. It's because there's a ton of different, but it's a very different experience. And so what you get out of fantasy football, I think, is very different than what you're going to get out of sports gambling. So I don't buy the idea. I will say in general, I think sports gambling becoming legal is great for everyone involved, because all it's going to do is there is something similar to that that is fantasy. One of the appeals of fantasy football for media companies is similar to the appeal of gambling, is that it gives you rooting interest in games that you might not care about. So for companies like ESPN that broadcast games, that talk about games, that write about games and discuss them, I think it's going to be great for media companies. I think it's going to be great for, I think it's going to be great for the players, for TV networks, for people like us who do analysis. It's just going to increase attention on the sport. And so, I think rising tide floats all boats kind of thing. So if you're asking me good or bad, I think it's good, just because I think it's going to be an increased awareness about everything.
Got it.
But ultimately, I actually think there's not as much overlap as people think.
Got it. Well,
it doesn't cannibalize,
no,
I should say.
I agree. Last question, Matthew. When does Fantasy Focus come back?
July. I appreciate that. July 30th, very exciting. The Fantasy Focus podcast comes back daily on Monday, July 30th. And we have a big announcement this year. We're going to be streamed live on Twitter this year. So 11 a.m. Eastern every day, follow at Fantasy Focus on Twitter. We're doing it in front of cameras and be able to watch us do the podcast live on Twitter. And it'll still be an audio experience as well. Wow. And they'll still take the video clips and put them in the app. But we're pretty excited about that. So and we'll take, Twitter questions and the whole thing. So it's a partnership between ESPN and Twitter, and Monday, July 30th.
That is awesome. Thanks so much for the time. I'm glad we were able to do this.
Yeah, Ross, my pleasure. Congratulations on all the success, and maybe we'll see you around.
Likewise.
What a story. Am I right? I mean, I didn't know that. Married with children? That's amazing. I mean, I was fast. I could talk to him for hours about that, because I knew nothing about that business or how it works. I love that. I love hearing people that have diverse backgrounds and hearing how they became what he's become. Really, really cool. Hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. I know you guys enjoy winning, which is why you absolutely need to check out PFF. Pro Football Focus uses their exclusive data on every play of every game to bring you the best fantasy stats and projections. Make sure you join PFF Edge for full access to PFF's rankings, fantasy draft tools, positional matchup charts, and of course, their award-winning website content. You high stakes, dude? Step it up to PFF Elite, which includes everything in Edge, plus the complete premium stats database, green line game picks, DFS optimizer. PFF Fantasy leads you to victory with data-driven projections, the expert rankings, and roster advice all year long. From draft night through the fantasy playoffs, the experts at PFF will give your team the inside advantage. Join PFF Fantasy today and prepare to win. Sign up now at profootballfocus.com. Very, very cool what Pro Football Focus has going on. Very, very cool to talk with Matthew Berry. And very, very excited, Evan, to talk tomorrow with both running backs for the Packers, Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones, as well as Christian Kirk, the rookie receiver out of Texas A&M for the Arizona Cardinals. And those of you that listen to the College Draft Podcast know that I mentioned him a long time ago. His first game of his freshman year against Arizona State in Houston, I was blown away by his explosiveness and athleticism, and talked about it on the College Draft Podcast that week. Awesome. Already excited for tomorrow's show. Hopefully you guys are already subscribing to this, so you'll get tomorrow as well. We'll get Evan's breakdown of the Packers and the Cardinals after we talk with the running backs and Christian Kirk, and Evan has to hear what they have to say. Then he'll give you the insight. Plus, Evan's answering some of your questions tomorrow. So those of you that have taken advantage of any of the sponsors over at RossTucker.com, Evan will be all over it and all about it tomorrow. the way, we'll post a little bit later than it normally does. Usually we have that up for you Thursday early morning. This time it'll be ready for you on your commute home Thursday afternoon. Other than that, I am totally, totally stuffed. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.